Hey everyone, I'm Thanos Davelis, and welcome back to The Greek Current, a podcast by the Hellenic American Leadership Council and Kathimerini, where we highlight the top stories of the day every afternoon with analysis from guest experts, policymakers, journalists, and HELC staff. Students and lecturers at a top Turkish university have been protesting since early January against a state-appointed rector, fearing that President Erdogan's growing reach on school campuses will crush what's left of academic freedom. Meanwhile, an abrupt decision at the end of last year to cancel Islamic prayers at Hora Museum, built as a cathedral a millennium ago before it was turned into a mosque and then a museum, has cast doubt on Turkey's plans to reconvert the monument. Ayla Jean Yakli, an Istanbul-based journalist covering Turkey, joins us to discuss her latest reporting on these two stories and more. Ayla, welcome back on The Greek Current.
Thanks for having me.
Earlier this month, Turkish President Erdogan appointed a new rector at Istanbul's Boğaziçi University, which, as you pointed out in your political article, is one of the most prestigious universities in Turkey. Why has this decision to appoint a new rector sparked such a reaction among students and academics?
The students and lecturers at Boğaziçi University are upset because this decision breaches a long-standing tradition at the school in which they elect their own rector from within the faculty. And although Erdogan had in 2016, after giving himself the power to appoint rectors, did appoint another one to Boğaziçi, this is the first time that the rector comes from outside of the university. And that has stoked fears among the population at the school that he will effectively carry out the government's wishes at the university, which has been spared from some of the other crackdowns that we've seen at other Turkish universities.
Can you give us some insight into the university? You mentioned that it's prestigious. Can you talk about that?
It is. It's set atop a hill that overlooks the Bosphorus Strait. That's where it gets its name, Boğaziçi in Turkish. And it was built in the mid-19th century by American missionaries and was turned over to the Turkish state as a public university in 1971. But it has remained the premier institution for education in Turkey and has graduated several CEOs of companies, diplomats, public officials, prime ministers, and it has the most competitive enrollment in the country. And it's also been a bit of a liberal bastion. There are LGBT groups that are active on campus. Anti-war protesters have been able to find space there. And from another perspective, it was one of the first universities to defy a ban by the previous government, which was ardently secular, against women wearing headscarves to classes. So it's been this sort of place where, you know, ideas are nurtured and cultivated, and people from across the country from different viewpoints can come together. And the student body and the faculty now fears that that'll be disrupted.
What can you tell us about Erdogan's pick and why Erdogan is so invested in who the rector is here?
I'll answer your second question first, and that is because of some of the reasons I just said, that this has remained a relatively anonymous institution at the university. The previous rector did not give Erdogan a list of perceived government enemies, as other university rectors did, which led to the firing of more than 8,000 personnel at universities since 2016. That came in the wake of the 2016 coup attempt here. Melih Bulu is an academic. He has served as a rector at two other universities, including one that opened in 2015. He also earned his graduate degrees from Boğaziçi. But it's his political background that in particular is distressing for the students at Boğaziçi. He is an early member of Erdogan's ruling Justice and Development Party. He ran as a candidate to become a nominee for the parliament as well as a district mayor. So he's been very much wrapped up in politics. That came before he was a rector. But he's just seen as both close to the government because of that background, as well as maybe not as qualified for the position because he wasn't teaching at Boğaziçi. That's sort of the credential that they want to see in their rector.
Asked about the student protesters, Erdogan said, "These are not students, these are terrorists." We also saw correspondents and journalists on Twitter post footage of the police taking a very hard approach to dealing with the protesters and students using tear gas or, you know, heavily armed units raiding homes and detaining students. How has the government been handling this protest? Is the crackdown that we saw at the peak of protests still going on?
To a much lesser degree. Basically, the students are now allowed to protest on campus. The government has dispatched police units at the university gates so that they will not protest outside, and they cite coronavirus regulations for that. So I think that the temperature has gone down a bit. They did arrest more than 40 students, and they have all been released, but they don't know if they'll eventually face criminal charges. You know, they're afraid that they could face charges of terrorism after Erdogan labeled them as such. But the new rector has said they can protest. We just want them to do it on campus. But the reason for such a strong reaction by the government initially seems to be in part because there are so few places left in Turkey where you can voice opposition to the government. Whereas maybe in the West, we think of universities as places where people express objections and demonstrate against government policies. They've become very, very rare at Turkish campuses, as they are throughout civil society here. So it's, I think, in part because this is one of the last remaining fortresses for protests, is one of the reasons why Erdogan clamped down so hard on it.
Has this spilled over into the political arena? Are we seeing, you know, opposition parties take this up as an issue?
They have. Both the main opposition, the CHP, as well as the pro-Kurdish party, HDP, have expressed support for the students and lecturers at Boğaziçi. And as might be expected, Erdogan's supporters think that he's in the right. And they point to Boğaziçi as being this reserve of the elite because it has produced so many prominent figures in society. But they also complain that it doesn't do enough to hire nationalist or Islamist professors. And, you know, it's a bit of an ivory tower. The people I spoke with completely dismissed those claims of elitism. This school attracts students from across the country. It's a public university without tuition, so it's open to children from more underprivileged backgrounds. And they insist that it's a place where people come together and are able to exchange views in a peaceful way when that is so much more difficult outside of campus in such a polarized society.
Ayla, I want to move us to another story you covered last week that focuses on Hora Museum in Istanbul. In August last year, following the conversion of Hagia Sophia from a museum into a mosque, the Turkish government announced that Hora Museum would also undergo the same change. At the end of last year, however, you noted that there was a decision to cancel scheduled Islamic prayers at Hora. What's the latest news here? Is the government reconsidering its original plan to change the status of the museum?
It's very difficult to get an answer on this from anybody in the government. They're quite silent when it comes to this issue. The cancellation of the prayers, the official reason given was that there needed to be more work done to prepare the site to switch from being a museum as it has for the past several decades back into being a mosque. But from just visiting the site and talking to people around there, there hasn't been any restoration work either. I did speak with a journalist who writes for a pro-government newspaper. He himself and his newspaper support it becoming a mosque again, and they suspect that the government has backed off because the decision to convert Hora as well as the Hagia Sophia over the summer was such a diplomatic issue for Turkey with countries including Greece, the United States, and European nations because of its perceived sort of, you know, lack of respect for Turkey's incredibly diverse history and the pluralism that's much reduced but still here today. There's also some speculation that because the conversion of Hagia Sophia was done so hastily and poorly, frankly, with sections of it now closed off and, you know, people unable to see the priceless mosaics and frescoes that are at Hagia Sophia, that there was this realization that Turkey could get in trouble with UNESCO. Both sites are on the World Heritage List. And so it does need to take greater care if it is going to go ahead with the conversion of Hora as well.
Ayla, Turkey is facing a number of challenges right now. Could this simply be that Erdogan is focused on other issues like the economy or COVID and is just waiting for the opportune moment to make this an issue again when it will serve him politically?
I think that that could be the way that it turns out ultimately. It's difficult to imagine the government backing down completely from this issue because they've delivered on previous conversions, regardless of how long it took. But you make a very good point. Turkey's economy is in trouble. It fears sanctions from both the U.S. and the European Union. It's grappling with the coronavirus pandemic, and there might be a desire by the government to wait until a more opportune time when it can more comfortably do something this controversial.
I want to wrap up with a last question. In a separate story, this week marked the anniversary of the murder of Hrant Dink, the Turkish-Armenian journalist who was killed on January 19th in 2007. And there was a virtual memorial event and a number of tributes. You posted about this on Twitter as well. What's the legacy that Hrant Dink leaves behind in Turkey?
I think the fact that 14 years after his death, that thousands still gather, whether it's online or outside of his newspaper office where he was shot in 2007, shows you what a great footprint he has left in so many lives here. One very concrete way we see his legacy continued is through the Hrant Dink Foundation, which was set up by his family after his murder. And they do extremely important work, everything from monitoring hate speech in the Turkish media, as well as putting on conferences that look at the Armenian legacy in Turkey. And, you know, he's mourned by his peers in the media. Journalists still feel pressure. Hopefully none of them will ever pay the ultimate price the way that Hrant Dink did. However, it's still a difficult place to be a journalist. And so his loss resonates with them. And he was also such an important voice and such a solitary voice for reconciliation between Turks and Armenians. And that promise has not been fulfilled to this day. And so that's another reason why he's so mourned.
Ayla, thank you for joining us on The Greek Current again. It was great speaking with you.
Thanks very much.
In other news, Greece will loosen some lockdown restrictions on February 1st, letting high schools reopen for the first time in more than 2 months after signs that COVID-19 infections are stabilizing. Education Minister Nikki Kerameos said the decision came after a unanimous proposal by the Committee of Experts Advising the Government. Regions with a high number of cases will only see junior high schools open, while senior high schoolers will continue with remote classes. In the meantime, restrictions on movement will remain in effect. This includes a national nightly curfew, a ban on domestic travel, and a mandatory 7-day quarantine for all passengers arriving from abroad. Meanwhile, Turkey's Foreign Minister Mevlut Cavusoglu said on Friday that Cyprus talks will be held in New York in late February or early March with the participation of the United Nations. The 5+1 meeting would include Turkey, Greece, the UK, the UN, and Cyprus's President Nikos Anastasiadis and Turkish Cypriot leader Ersin Tatar. The announcement came after talks in Brussels with senior EU officials. Finally, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg, who met with Cavusoglu on Friday, welcomed the continuation of NATO-brokered talks on a military deconfliction mechanism between Greece and Turkey, as well as the resumption of exploratory contacts between the two countries next week. Stoltenberg is scheduled to meet with Greek Foreign Minister Nikos Dendias on Monday. That wraps up today's episode of The Greek Current. Thanks for tuning in.